This is 50 Minutes with Mark Wade. I'm Ian Brill. I'm an editor at Boom.
I'm Daphna, and an editorial assistant.
I'm Mark Wade.
And let me tell the good...
I don't know.
I was starting to tell the good listeners a story. They know what Mark does. This is episode what?
It's called being facetious, Ian. I know you've heard of it.
If you guys need me for this, just let me know. I'm going to go get a Coke. Go ahead.
This might be about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
A young Ian Brill has purchased the DVD set of Batman the Animated Series, one of the first ones. And on the supplemental material for the episode Heart of Ice, they interview a couple of creators. Paul Dini, the writer, Paul Levitz, I think, maybe, and Mark Wade. And during that interview, I remember Mark, this is before I knew Mark, saying... that you had read every Batman story, you had listened to every Batman radio show, you had seen every movie, and Heart of Ice is one of the best. And first of all, I would agree that Heart of Ice is one of the best Batman things.
But that was not your takeaway. That's interesting. That was not your takeaway.
Well, I already knew that, though. Because, I mean, before that, who was Mr. Freeze? Right. Now you have a really... they basically made Mr. Freeze into what he is. Before that, no one in comics... I mean, our people certainly tried their darndest, but they... You know, coming up from a medium that Batman did not originate in, nor did Mr. Freeze, and then come up with something cool for him is really cool, if I can be redundant.
I bet you can.
And funny.
Being cool. If I could turn into the Arnold Schwarzenegger version of Mr. Freeze for a second. But what I took away from that was, how could you get every Batman thing?
It was not easy. It was... First off, not the getting of every Batman story was not easy, and I would also append to that the reading of every Batman story was not easy. It wasn't necessarily a mission. It was just I love Batman and Superman, and so I just I really wanted to read every. And this is growing up. I mean, I started reading Batman in 66, so half the battle is already done.
Yeah.
Half those stories I can read as they come out. So we're now talking about pre 1966 stuff, but it's not just that. It's every. You know, every prose novel, every short story, every radio episode that you appear on with Superman, cartoon.
It's probably easier now.
Yeah.
But, like, back then, how did you find, like, the old serials? The racist old serials,
Very racist
old serials. When you see the first Batman serials where... Batman has kind of like devil horns.
The 15-minute chapter, to put it in context of anybody under the age of 75, you go to the movie theaters, they would show like a 10-minute, chapter 12 or 15 of the big Batman movie, and then they would, every week would be a different chapter and a cliffhanger and so forth. So, and the first one in 1943 was insanely racist. He was battling the Japs. Dr. Daka and the Japs, and it was just...
Although, later they put those out on video and they tried to...
Did they dub it?
Did they try to, censor them?
They tried to censor them and dub them, and it didn't,
The irony is that those things are now, produced by Sony, right?
I know. But now they're out now. I mean, no, even back then when I was, when I was a teenager, you could get, people would every once in a while show them at conventions, and and that's probably the only time at a convention I've ever gone to the film room. Is to see that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, who now they still have film rooms at conventions.
They have like all day anime things.
Who goes? You can go home.
Anime fans, Mark.
You can go, but when you
doesn't count them as people.
I don't count those people. And besides that's not my point. You go to conventions, you go to the film rooms or whatever, and then as I get into my 20s, then people were starting to circulate VHS tapes, or Betamax tapes, and getting all that stuff. So the hardest stuff to come by, the absolute hardest stuff to come by was in 66, Britain published, there was an outfit in Britain that published these like dozen or so novellas, not full novels, and only barely written in the English language. I mean, they're really not good, but they're like, those two-page stories that appear sometimes in old comics?
Yeah.
It's like one of those, but like 75 pages long. So if you can imagine reading those. But I would, it got to the point where I'm reading every Batman story ever, because now it becomes like, well, I'm almost there.
Yeah.
So I may as well just finish it out now. I mean, it doesn't mean I retain every Batman story ever, but it becomes an obsession. So about 2 months ago, I'm almost there.
Yeah.
And I've been there for, I've been almost there for years and years. But yeah. There's one issue of Batman, there's one issue of Detective Comics I never read at that point.
Uh-huh.
It was Detective 178. There's nothing special about it.
Yeah.
There's nothing unusual about it. It's just a 1950s Batman comic. But no one has a copy. There are no copies to be found. I've never read a copy.
Yeah.
No one I know has ever read a copy. The story was never reprinted. I don't know. And finally, I find it on eBay. After years and years, I find a cheap enough copy on eBay, and I don't care what condition it's in. As Ross will tell, Ross is the opposite end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Ross needs his comics, and I salute this, but he needs them to be like super pristine, double near mint, encased in Mylar, and then slabbed in granite. So, whereas me, I just, if I wanted to eat off of it, I'd buy a plate. I just want...
And you do have those Batman collectible plates, right?
That's it. Well, who doesn't? So, what do you think I'm eating off of right now? So I finally get the Detective comic, and it's funny. I get it. I know, it's Saturday morning, I open it up, and I just kind of stare at it for a while, and then I just put it on a shelf. And I still haven't read it. Because I know that when I read it,
Now this is becoming
A
70 story song.
I know.
To tie it into last week's podcast,
that's right.
I'm assuming it's last week's, it's like...
I know. Mark Waid found dead and home, you know, copy of Detective 78 clutched in his fist. No, it's not like my life purpose is over, but it is that sort of weird thing about how once, well, I mean, there must be TV series or DVD sets or whatever that you have come invested in after the fact that you kind of get to the end and you're like, I don't want to watch the last episode because when I watch the last episode, then it's over and there's no more.
Yeah.
That's kind of, so that I will eventually read that issue of Batman, or that issue of Detective Comics, but...
I bet the next issue of Batman...
Wait, do you have something like that?
No, my mind will give up to be a collector. My mind won't let me become a collector. Eventually,
I'll
just go.
Not a collector, like someone who you need to see, read every bit of material, see every bit of material.
She means more like, I think
I'm talking about completionist.
There is something. There actually, there is something like that.
Farscape, which finish. Yeah. Yeah. But
I have to watch Farscape for work. I have to. And
but
Mark will.
It's such a burden.
But
laugh at me.
It's one of the best science fiction shows on TV.
You have to watch Farscape. It's great. You get to watch Farscape.
I will. Yeah. I am kind of obsessed about reading every Legion of Superheroes story. I do want to do that.
Yeah. Well, we can arrange that. So that's done. So, that was no challenge at all.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff is reprinted.
But every Batman, and there are some truly wretched, forgettable Batman stories, but it's 70 years. Now, again...
They can't all be gems.
Well, remember, actually, and the reason I pick on Batman specifically for this podcast is because, or you brought it up, is because Ian's wrestling with the chair of menace again, is because there's probably, and I'm not counting fan fiction in this, because if you count fan fiction, then I think you're off on a whole different numerical tangent, but...
Yeah.
I would be willing to bet that there have been more stories told about Batman than any other fictional character ever.
And let me add something to that. There are a lot of characters where, like, there's the right way to do a character.
Yeah.
Like, we saw that with Spider-Man with One More Day. You can kind of change him around as much as you can, but eventually he's going to be the down-on-his-luck schlub who has Aunt May and a secret identity and all this. Batman, there's all these different versions of Batman.
Yep.
You have Adam West.
Yep.
And the Bruce Timm animated one, and the Frank Miller one, and the Dan O'Neill, Neil Adams one, and on and on and on. And they kind of all live together.
Yeah, they're all very thematically similar, except for Adam West. But even still, the thing that people always forget about this TV show is that everybody wants to remember that TV show as completely unfaithful to the Batman concept.
Oh, not at all, though.
But not at all. If
you read those comics.
Because everybody who looks at that show
is
all they're thinking about is their favorite Batman story of all time. And it doesn't, and it's always something that doesn't match up to that tonally. But if you go back and look at the Batman comics of 1964, 1965, and 1966, they are every bit as goofy and silly and absurd as those TV shows are. It was an incredibly faithful adaptation, actually.
Here's the thing about Batman. Yeah. In my, not as extensive as Mark's, my research into Batman, buying the Golden Age stuff, is it starts off dark.
Yeah.
I remember one of my favorite early Batman stories is the Gardner Fox one, where his fiancée is hypnotized by a vampire.
The monk, yeah.
Yeah, Matt Wagner eventually turned that into a full-length series. But pretty soon, Batman's costume becomes blue, and he has a big grin on his face.
And he's a deputy of the police department.
A couple of decades,
it
just becomes happy.
He's running around in broad daylight all the time. And he's fighting aliens and stuff. Yeah. And, but, it's, look, he endures. I mean, that's the beauty of, but that's what I think, again, like, so I said, that's what I find amazing about that character, is that not Sherlock Holmes, not Mickey Mouse, not even Superman, probably not, you know, not Captain Kirk, like, yeah. No one, when they created that character in 1939, no one could ever have predicted,
yeah,
that not just that character, but any character,
yeah,
of fiction ever would have this sort of longevity and this sort of shelf life. So, yeah, you know, the, it's not so much that there are a lot of interestingly loopy Batman stories in the past. What I find more interesting is that there are as many good ones as there are,
yeah,
given how long that property has sustained. I can't think of anything else that would have eclipsed Batman.
Do you think there is the fact that people don't feel beholden to a certain era? I mean, you could write a Batman that's silly and call it a campy story. You could, right, write the Dark Detective. You could write the horror, I mean, elsewhere.
Right.
And people are going to say, that's not my Batman. They recognize that this character exists and across multiple types of stories and, yeah, genres. But other characters, like you said, Peter Parker feels wrong if he doesn't have the same set circumstances when you get into him.
Yeah.
Do you think that contributes a bit to his longevity?
Probably. I mean, I think the simpler your character conceit is, the easier, yeah, the easier it is to keep that through line, and the harder it is to get off track. I mean
he's a character in and Peter Parker depends on his family. Yeah. I mean, his storytelling comes from his fact that the family that he cares for still exists.
Right.
Batman's, yeah, a lone wolf.
True.
Except for Alfred.
Yeah,
but there's a long time. There's a time where they killed off Alfred.
Yeah.
Alfred was fat.
Alfred was fat at first, and then he was in the and then they put him in the cereal. And then the actor was a thin, so they made Alfred thin, and then they decided they would kill him off.
Now, did you have this experience? Because you started off with the Adam West series, as did I. That was the first Batman I was exposed to. And when you saw Commissioner Gordon, did you say, why does Commissioner Gordon look like Alfred?
Well, yes, and why does he not have a mustache? That's the thing. Yeah. Well, but here's the genius, and I've talked about this elsewhere, but here's the genius of casting the Batman show. And I cannot take credit for this observation. This was Tom Pyre. How you make 35-year-old Adam West look in his late 20s, and how you make Burt Ward, who is 25, look like a high school student, is you surround them with every other cast member who is 102 years old.
That's right.
Everybody else in that show.
Tallulah Bankhead.
No, Rudy Valley, who's gumming his way through scenes, and it's just
Otto Preminger. I know. Talking of giving back to Mr. Freeze.
Every person on that show was 20 years older than the main characters. It was genius casting. It made them look young and vital. So, there's your show. But again, that's the Batman. That was the obsessive compulsion. I mean, it's interesting that your takeaway from that was not.
I just think it's amazing that you can get every Batman.
It took a while, and like I said, there's still the one I haven't read. So
now it seems to me that Superman is a more favorite character of yours than Batman.
It is.
Have you read every Superman thing?
Oh, yeah. But that's just not as hard to like.
Oh, okay.
There's not as much
Superman stuff.
There's not as many permutations. There's a bunch of radio shows I've never listened to, but that's because there's a bunch of radio shows that no one has ever.
Oh, because they're like erased.
Yeah, DC did this deal in the early '70s where some guy came to them, it was pioneering old-time radio on vinyl, cut a deal with them to borrow their library of Superman tapes, and then he ended up, I don't know if it was a fly-by-night deal or something else happened, but nobody ever saw him again, and so that those tapes are gone.
Oh, really?
So there's 5 years worth of, three or four years worth of Superman radio shows that no one has ever listened to. They still exist in script form. A lot of them in the DC archives.
I think it's time that we get some of comics' best and brightest.
I know.
Let's start recreating those.
Recreating those. There we go. That's what we'll do on the next podcast. We'll do. So again, this doesn't make me a better writer. It just makes me an obsessive fanboy. But I just there's something about wanting to read every story. It just is.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I know what that's like. Yeah.
And get the big picture. So, and you? Do you have anything you're obsessive about like that?
Star Trek books.
Really?
Yeah. I've read all the Star Trek books, from the original series to Enterprise, including the Fantastic Voyage collections that they do, the fan stories that they publish, and short stories in the magazines, and
I'm gobsmacked.
Are you surprised? Really?
Well, only because
because it was the only stuff that in Fresno that I could afford was at the used bookstores, and it was science. I convinced my mom it was science.
Yeah.
I didn't mention the fiction part.
Yeah.
And it's actually how I learned. Learn English.
This is not,
Star Trek.
This is
books.
Not a judgmental look. The judgmental look will come after we stop recording. This is more like what I'm curious about is to me that is a whole nother realm of of fandom, and I'm curious, how many, ballpark, how many books are we talking about? Ballpark.
At home, it's...
Star Trek fans don't get sports references.
Yeah.
Okay, they're... I'm sorry. In, by the Romulan yardstick. How...
It's got to be, at this point, at least 1,000. It has to be. Like, the original series, I never watched the show.
Right.
I read these characters in the books. These characters exist as like literary figures.
That's interesting.
And so it's weird for me. It's like Batman. It's like the Batman Campy show after you read the Dark Knight. Dark Knight Run.
I understand exactly. Yeah.
Blows my mind.
And they make new ones. I mean, Keith DeCando, the first Ghost Rider, has his own Klingon crew.
He has his own series called. It's awesome. Corps of Engineers. And it's about a bunch of engineers and the starship Da Vinci traipsing around the universe. And
hey, look, we are done. You're going to be editing the heck out of this one. All right. I guess that wraps us up for this time. Yeah. Thanks, all. I'm Mark Wade.
I'm Daphna.
I'm Ian Brill.
And we're 50 Minutes with Mark Wade. We'll see you next week.